Okay, morning everyone. Today's daf and Shabbos daf Kuf Mem Vav. We are a little bit behind today. We're on daf Kuf Mem Amud Beis, and we're starting right before the Mishnah. We just have one more little thing to do before we start the new Mishnah. And yesterday we finished up the whole topic of Schita. Schita in the Gemara and Shabbos takes up 3 blot of Gemara, a little bit less, about 2.5 blot of Gemara. It started in the beginning of the 22nd Perek. We talked about the barrel and the breaking of the barrel on Shabbos, and then it segued into a discussion about stuffing rags and using rags to absorb, and it led us to a discussion of Schita. And so finally yesterday we conclude that discussion of Schita. There was just one end note to the discussion of Schita, and that is the honeycomb. The Mishnah taught us that regarding the honeycomb, we're going all the way back to Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Just rereading the Mishnah, Chalos Devasha Rizkan Mer of Shabbos. So if I have the honeycombs and I grind up the honeycombs, I squeeze the honeycombs before Shabbos. Now, the honeycombs apparently are such that if you squeeze it, so the honey is going to come out, and the honey will continue to flow out. And the Mishnah says regarding the honeycombs that V'yatzu Me'atzman Asurim, that any of the honey that comes out on Shabbos is going to be Asur. Rabbi Eliezer, and our Mishnah says it is Mutter. Okay, and I would imagine that the position of the Chachamim is, despite the fact that you haven't done anything on Shabbos itself, but the basic idea is that if you enjoy the honey that comes out on Shabbos, you're going to be tempted to go and squeeze it on Shabbos. What do we learn in our Gemara? The Gemara here quotes a Braisa. We are on the top of Kuf Mem Amud Beis, and Chalos Devashki also Rav Oshia min Narda. So Rav Oshia comes from the city of Narda, and also Vaisi Masnitz Abiyade, and he brings a Braisa in his hands. And the Braisa reads, Eisim Anavim Shavitzka Merav Shabbos, that I have olives or grapes that were crushed before Shabbos, V'yatz Me'atzman, and it comes down on its own. Asurim, it's going to be also Rav Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Matirin, and Rav Elazar and Rabbi Shimon both say that it's Mutter. Okay, so what happened over here is that we have a Braisa very similar to our Mishnah. There are 2 notable distinctions. Number one, we're not talking about a honeycomb, we're talking about grapes and olives. Number 2 is that Rav Elazar is Mutter, that we knew already. This Braisa gives us one other Tana, and that is Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so that's the 2 things that come out of this new Braisa. So Am Rav Yosef, Gavri Yisera Asa Lashmina. So Rav Yosef says, really, what have you brought to the table? You didn't really teach us anything new in that I already know there's a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer. And all this Braisa tells me now is that Rabbi Shimon sides with Rabbi Eliezer. That's not going to change anything. There's still the minority viewpoint. It's still Rabbi Eliezer. So what did you bring to the table? So Yosef was unimpressed. Amalei Abaye Tuva Kamashman. So Abaye tries to support. No, there's a lot to be learned over here. Because in the Mishnah, what are we talking about? We're talking about food and food, right? The honeycomb which produces the honey. It's interesting. The Gemara over here refers to the honey as food. Okay, right. We know that honey is one of the 7 mashkin. So maybe the honey of the 7 mashkin is referring to date honey and not to bees honey. Maybe that's the distinction. Either way, whatever the point is, whatever the case is, the point being is that essentially what comes out is not much different than what was in the honeycomb. But avahacha demikar uchle v'sof mashkin malal. But over here, I might have thought that we're talking about grapes and the juice coming out of grapes. Olives and the oil that comes out of the olive. That's totally different. So I might have thought that even Rabbi Eliezer, who tends to be more mako when it comes to the honey, maybe machmir over here, so kamash malan, that's a chiddush. That even Rabbi Eliezer is going to still be mako. Now, I say it's a chiddush in Rabbi Eliezer. So, truth of the matter is, if we go back to Rav Yosef, I guess if we were to still defend Rav Yosef's position, we didn't learn much over here, you're right. Meaning we may have learned a kula in terms of Rabbi Eliezer, but in terms of the accepted halacha, we didn't really learn anything new. We are now up to the next Mishnah here in the 22nd Parag. This Mishnah has a lot of ramifications for Hilcha Shabbos. It's funny, it's tucked away over here in the end of the 22nd Parag of Shabbos. So what's it doing here? How come it didn't come up in the 3rd Parag of Shabbos? Okay, some questions which I raised, which I really don't have answers to, but the Mishnah over here starts off, Kol HaShabbah B'chamim Erev Shabbos, Sharonos HaBechamim B'Shabbos. If something was heated in water before Shabbos, or let's put it in simpler terms, it was cooked. If it was cooked before Shabbos, so Sharonos HaBechamim B'Shabbos, so you're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos itself. In other words, the tried and true rule of Ein Bishal Acher Bishal, there's no cooking after cooking, meaning, once you cook an item, so then it's cooked. So now you can't violate the malacha of bishul on Shabbos because the food has already been cooked. So you're not cooking, you're just simply reheating. Now, in the world of reheating, so let's remember, there are a lot of rules about reheating food. There's rules of shihia, there's rules of hachzara. So I don't mean, I'm simplifying right now, I'm oversimplifying right now, but the basic rule of the Mishnah is ein bishul achar bishul, that once the food is cooked, so then it's not subject to being cooked again. The Mishnah over here is just giving us a overarching general rule of you can't cook it again. Now, if the food is not cooked before Shabbos, so you can put it in hot water. Now, when I say hot water over here, most probably what I mean is water of a Kli Rishon, meaning the water that was heated inside the original pot that was on the fire. Even if that pot was taken off the fire, it still has the status of a Kli Rishon. So what you could do is you can pour water over it. Now, I'm pouring hot water over it. Where is this water coming from? It's coming from a Kli Rishon, it's coming from a Kli Sheni. It is not particularly clear from our Mishnah. There is a major debate amongst the Rishonim whether or not Irui, the pouring from a Kli Rishon, has the status of a Kli Rishon or does not have the status of a Kli Rishon. Now, would not be a good time to go over the Machlokas, but, and just in general, just know that there's a lot of details over here that the Mishnah is not stating. We're just giving very overarching rules regarding the fact that once it's cooked, it's not subject to being cooked again. If it wasn't cooked, so then you can't put it in hot water. You can pour water over it, but you can't put it in hot water. Chutz min hamaliach hayashan, v'kulyas hayispanim, except for two exceptions. Where salted fish or fish that comes from Spain, sha'adachtan zu'igamar malachtan, these are very delicate, very sensitive foods. And even if I pour hot water over them, they're still subject to being cooked. In the world of halacha, we call this kalei habishul, foods that are so soft, so tender, so delicate, that they're going to get cooked even in irui, even if I just pour water on them, and I don't place them actually into the pot themselves. Okay, again, this could really turn into an entire discussion of Hilchot Shabbos and Bishul B'Shabbos and cooking on Shabbos. We're going to go on in the Gemara, but just know that this Mishnah is really one of the central locations of discussing the halachas of reheating cooked foods on Shabbos. Kigon mai. So the Gemara says, can I have an example of kol shabbat b'chamim erev Shabbos? Now it's funny, the Gemara can give so many different examples of food that was cooked. But it happens to be, the Gemara has a particular agenda over here in terms of wanting to highlight a dish that was popular in the times of the Gemara, Marav Safa Gagontar Negalosa de Rebbe Abba. The Rebbe Abba's chicken soup. Now Rebbe Abba's chicken soup, Rashi says, now you know how when you're sick, you're supposed to give him chicken soup. So that you think that's a new phenomenon. That's Rashi on today's daf. Actually, yesterday's daf, but you understand. Tarnagolos of the Rebbe Abba, if you look at Rashi, yamim rabim. Actually, his chicken soup, I know our chicken soups are cooked for a long time. I don't know. Rashi says that his was cooked for many days. In fact, it's cooked such a long time. Sounds nasty. It's cooked such a long time that the chicken disintegrates in that pot. And so basically what you're left with is just pure broth of what once upon a time was a chicken. That's Tarna Galasa de Rabbi Abba. The Amos Rav Safra Zimna Chari Kala Lahasa. And by the way, Rashi says, I read it, but I'm trying to make this clear. Rashi says it was drunk for medicinal purposes. Of course, it's chicken soup. What else is it drunk for? The Amos Rav Safra Zimna Chari Kala Lahasa Vuklamine. The Gemara gives us anecdotes. Rav Safra went there, he ate from it, the Elo. Rabbi Abba Dashkain Chamar Baltis and Tarfe is Nase. It was terrible. I had to wash it down with wine, not just any wine, but it had to be 3-year-old wine. If I didn't wash it down with wine, I would have been in serious danger. That stuff was not pleasant. Rabbi Yochanan Daik Raik Mikutach de Bavli. Now, okay, the Gemara here, so it's enjoyable. Meaning, basically, you know, you're comfortable with your food. And you go somewhere else, and you're not used to the food of other places. So I go right annually. I take my my pilgrimage down to the south side of this country, and the food there is wonderful, but it's not the same as here. Meaning, it's interesting, but you're used to your own comfortable foods. Rav Yochanan writes Mikutach de Bavli, when Rav Yochanan, who was a B'nai Eretz Yisrael, so when he thinks about the Kutach HaBavli, so the Gemara says he spits, he just, to him it's totally rancid. But by the way, Kutach HaBavli was rancid, meaning it was a cheese dip that they made in Bavel, which basically was moldy. It was like stale bread, stale cheese, you know. In Bavel they love that stuff. Rav Yochanan couldn't take it. I'm Rav Yosef, Alei Rakan, Amitar Nagalosa, de Rabbi Abba. So Rav Yosef says, look, I could go the other way. Meaning I think about Rabbi Abba's chicken soup, and also, right, I spit from that. Va'odam Rav Gaza Zimnachadi Klalahasam Va'avdis Kutach de Bavli. And in fact, Kutach Bavli is bad. Now, by the way, this is written from the perspective of Talmud Bavli. Meaning, if you look back at the cover of your sefer, you'll notice this is Talmud Bavli. So, of course, I mean, you know, we obviously have a horse in the race in terms of which food is better, the food of Eretz Yisrael or the food of Bavel. So he says, of course, the Kutach Bavli is unbelievable. She'ilaminei kol bircha ma'arava. What happened is I took my Kutach Bavli down to Eretz Yisrael, and it became like the most popular dish over there. It was fantastic. Okay. Koshel ababa chamim v'chulei. Hidiach mai. Now, in our Mishnah, what do we learn? That if you have a really delicate, sensitive food, so, and I just pour hot water on it. I don't put it in the hot water. I just simply pour the hot water on it. So the Mishnah says you cannot do that. And the Gemara wants to know, hidiach mai. We've been getting a lot of these types of questions recently in the Gemara. And what if I do? Meaning, I know the answer is don't do it. And if I do, then what? I'm Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, it's an issa d'oraisa, it's cooking. Even though it's not the classic conventional, I have the pot on the fire, water's in the fire, the water's boiling, or it doesn't even have to be boiling, just simply over yatsa lettuce bowl. And then I put the food in the pot. That's conventional cooking. This is not conventional. I'm pouring hot water on a food. But because the food is so delicate and so sensitive, and because this is how the food gets cooked, it's a iser d'oraisa. Amram rabbere de Rabbi Nachman Amitani lechutz mimalech yash v'kol etzayis panim shadachtan zui gemar malachtan. Truth of the matter is a simple reading of our Mishnah brings us to that conclusion as well. Because our Mishnah says that when I pour hot water over it, that is gemar malachtan. That's it. That is, I'm finished the malacha. Why would the Mishnah use the word malacha? Because it's an iser d'oraisa. Shema mina. Yes, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba v'Rav Asi kamei de Rav Yochanan. And from here until the next Mishnah, on the top of the next Talmud. So the Gemara is going to go through a very interesting give and take. We could file this under Agadita. Right? Most of what we're about to see right now is Agadita, but a very enjoyable discussion. The conversation takes place between Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Asi in front of Rabbi Yochanan, Kamenamnen. Now at this point in time, Rabbi Yochanan is sleeping, but sleeping is not really the right word. Menamnim, you see that word in the Gemara happen often. It means you're somewhere between awake and asleep. Okay? Yeah, correct. Okay, I throw out a couple of examples, but you know what? let's save it for another time. Amale Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Rabbi Asi, and so now here we go. Conversation taking place between these Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael. Now their students are Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan is really the venerable scholar of that group, and Rav Yochanan will tolerate a conversation between the two of them as they try to exchange information with one another. Eventually, Rav Yochanan will get to the point in time where he tolerated enough, and he basically will then step in the conversation. But in the meantime, however, they converse. They wonder, how come birds in Bavel are so fat? Right, fat, I would imagine, means delicious, meaning they have a lot of good fat on them. They're delicious. How come the birds in Bavel are like that? Now, I imagine the Gemara inserts this whole discussion over here because we just got done discussing the Tarnagolosa de Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba's chicken soup. So, and it was not a good chicken soup. And so, I imagine now the Gemara is inserting here because the Gemara knows, you know, we in Bavel, right, not we, but we're in Boca, but we in Bavel have it good. So how come the birds of Bavel are so fat? Amalei klach lemidbar azav reich shmeinim mehem. So he says to him, "Well, I'll take you to the desert of Aza, and I'll show you even fatter birds." Mimnei mamo adnu shebavel smechem. How come they're so happy in Bavel on Yontov? Mimnei sheinaniim. So the answer that he provides is, well, because in Bavel they're so poor, so during the rest of the year, they really struggle. Comes Yontif, so they're really enjoying whatever delicacies they can put together for Yontif. They really dress up. They look excellent. Here in Eretz Yisrael, I can't tell the difference between Talmud Chacham and anyone else on the street. Sharp answer. He says, because they're not B'nai Torah in Bavel. And what exactly does that mean? So Rashi writes, I'm reading Rashi, Kol kach lechabdam kibnei Eretz Yisrael. Meaning they're not as great as B'nai Torah as we are over here in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, a Talmud Chacham distinguishes himself how? By being a Talmud Chacham. In Bavel, they're not as remarkable, and so therefore they need their clothing to distinguish themselves. Very sharp answer. How come Ovdei Kochavim are mizuhamos? That's a word that's very difficult to translate. I'm not sure if you're really going to squeeze a translation out of me. Spiritually impure, I don't know. It's a word which I think is better left untranslated. So, because of their diet, and they eat shkatzim v'ramasim. So, itar b'ur Rav Yochanan, and now Rav Yochanan wakes up. Okay, so he allowed a lot of exchange to take place between the Zamorayim, but at this point, amalahu dardiki lo kach amarti lachem. So he says, dardiki, you're going to see that word a lot in the Gemara. It basically means you're young tamid chachamim, but emphasis on the word young. Meaning, you're good. I'm glad you think all this. But Amar lechachma chotiat, right? The Gemara quotes the pasuk. Pasuk's in Mishlei. So you say to wisdom, "You're my sister." Now, what exactly does that mean? The Gemara here explains. Amar lecha davka choscha shiasur lecha om rehu v'imlav lo som rehu. Someone asks you a question. Is your sister forbidden to you? No, that's an easy one. I can feel that one. The answer is yes. Right? She's an Issacharis. So, if you know halacha as clearly as you know that, so then good. So then open your mouth. But, if you're not sure about something, best not to say anything. Okay? Very frightening line of the Gemara. So, v'lei malan mar eiz a man. So, okay, so now Rav Yochanan basically shut them all up. And now they say to Rav Yochanan, okay, please, could you explain all this to us? So, question number one, how come the birds in Bavel are so fed? How come the birds in Eretz Yisrael are so lean? So the answer is, because the birds of Bavel never experienced exile. The birds in Eretz Yisrael experienced exile. The pasuk regarding Moav says that they were quiet, they never moved, and going into exile, so that creates an inferior everything. Inferior nation, inferior quality of product. It just creates inferior. Now, the birds were exiled. Now, the Gemara is saying a lot when the Gemara is saying the birds are exiled, meaning we know the Jewish people were sent into exile, right? We just celebrated Purim. Purim was the end of that exile. The exile goes for 70 years. And the Gemara in Megillah, right, Daf Yud Aleph, has a discussion over there. Great discussion. Everyone was trying to figure out when the 70 years ended. Achashverosh tried to figure it out when it ended. He didn't do a good job. Belshazzar tried to figure out when the 70 years ended. He didn't do a good job. Achashverosh tried to figure out when the 70 years ended. He didn't do so well. So everyone tried to figure out when the 70 years ended. In the meantime, however, it was 70 years of exile, and to tell you, Rabbi Yehuda, Omen Nun Beishana Lo Avra Ish Bi Yehuda. Of those 70 years, 52 of those 70 years, it wasn't just that the people of Eretz Yisrael were exiled, everything was exiled. All living creatures in Eretz Yisrael left Eretz Yisrael. Part of the gullus was that gone, totally, even animals. Shenemar al harim esa bechi v'neim el fashamayim v'ad behema nadadu halachu. The Gemara here quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, describing exile not only being just for the people, but for the animals as well. And the Gemara gives the gematria, behema begematria chamishim v'tartin havu. Behema is 52 years, so that is a 52-year Exile for the animals. By the way, why not 70? In other words, where are those 18 years? So Rashi points out that after 52 years, we got our first grant of permission to start building the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh is, how do you say the one before him? The predecessor. So Achashverosh's predecessor was Koresh, and Koresh gave permission for the Jews to go back to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the building was stopped. Very possibly could be that Achashverosh was the one who stopped it. Possibly. In other words, and that was 18 years before, finally, where we were given permission from Daryavish. By the way, according to the Medrash, you know who Daryavish was? Esther's son. So, that's according to the Medrash. That finally, we were given permission by Daryavish to go back into Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so in other words, of those 70 years, we started building the Beis HaMikdash 18 years earlier. So, 52 years, however, gone. Nothing was in Eretz Yisrael. No people, no animals as well. And so now, the birds were exiled, the birds have come back. That's why they're not fatty. That is the answer number one of Rav Yochanan. I'm Rav Yaakov, I'm Rav Yochanan, Kulan Chazur Chutz Mikul Yisrael Hispanim. And oh, by the way, all animals returned back to Eretz Yisrael except for the Kul Yisrael Hispanim, which, by the way, also we just learned about in our Mishnah, one of the Kalei HaBishul, one of those foods, which are very delicate. It couldn't make it back to Eretz Yisrael. I'm Rav Hani Madre de Bavol Mehare Maya Lein Etam. The communication, the water communication between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, don't ask me for the geography, I cannot help you over here. Anyway, but the point being is that there is a water source connecting the two. V'haikev and delosharir, shadre lo matzi salik. And this koyas ha'ispanan does not have a backbone. And literally here, we're talking about a fish. It does not have a backbone. And because it does not have a backbone, it cannot make that trek from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael, and so therefore it did not return back to Eretz Yisrael. Now we're up to question number two. Why in Bavel are they so much happier on Yontif? Because they were not cursed. The Pasuk says. And again, we go back to Nevi'im, part of the Klala of those living in Eretz Yisrael, v'yishbati kol mesosa, chuga chadasha v'shabata v'chol mawadeha. There's going to be no longer any joy in chag, in chodesh, in Shabbos. Uksiv chashechem mawadechem sana nafshi, hayu alay l'torach. Here, Yishayahu should sound familiar. Chazon Yishayahu. All your chodesh and your moadim sanun avshay, they're going to be despised. So my hayu alay at letarach amar bilaz amar kash baruch lo dali yisrael she chotim lefanai. Not enough that the Jewish people sin elo shematrichen osi leida ezikzira kasha avi aleihem. They want to even know afterwards what the punishment is going to be. So right, well, we know we did wrong, but okay, but at least tell us what's going to happen to us. And the gemara follows that under chutzpah. The Gemara talks about how difficult it was in Eretz Yisrael during Yontif. During Yontif in Eretz Yisrael, in the town of Tzipori, where that was the main Jewish community, we're talking now end of the Second Temple, after the Second Temple period, we have armies, troops, march through Tzipori on Yontif. V'am Rabbi Chanin elachal kol rego rego shlo abala Tveria Agmon, Kamton, Balzamora, and we have other types of Roman infantry who come into the town of Tveria, by the way, next town over, the other side of the mountain, and up by the north. So we have other Roman infantry coming in during Yontif as well. Yontif was just a very difficult time in Eretz Yisrael, so that is Rav Yochanan's response to question number two. Question number three. They're not indigenous to Bavel, meaning they're out of place. The Amri Inshi Bemasa Shame. Below Masa Tusva'ai. If you are in your own location, your name is enough. Name recognition is enough. You're on your home floor, you're on your home court. You're simple. Your name is all you need, so that people know who you are. If you're below masa, if you're not in your local establishment, so then two sva'ai, Rashi, kvodi talui b'simla'ai. Right. Then I got to dress in a certain way to distinguish myself from others. So in other words, Bavel is not their home. Eretz Yisrael is their home. So then they move to Bavel and they're not on their home court. So that's why they have to dress and look dignified and refined. Okay, a little more to finish up our agadic portion of today. The pasuk in Yeshayahu. Tini Rav Yosef el Tamil Chacham Shabava Shaosin Tzitzin Uprachim LaTorah. Tamil Chacham and Mbavo, that they make tzitzin, buds, sprouts, and flowers for the Torah. Again, more speaking to the idea that when you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, so you have to do more to highlight this is the Torah, this is what we need to honor. They're not on their home court. And finally, question number four. How come this Ovde Kochavim experience, they have the Zuama? So the first answer that was given before Rav Yochanan woke up was because of their diet, they got some Ramasim. Which, by the way, in the Gemara Nida, not that long ago, no, I'm sorry, the Gemara Shabbos, okay, thank you, right, the Gemara Shabbos not that long ago actually brought up as a consideration that their diet actually makes their biology a little bit different. But in the meantime, however, Rav Yochanan has a different answer. Shalom du'al Har Sinai. You know why? Because he didn't experience Har Sinai. It's that simple. I mean, I wish it were that simple. I mean, if I can explain this any better. The Nachash had relations with Chava, and he inserted into her Zuama. So again, you need somebody of a certain stature to explain all this to you. That will not be me. I will read the Gemara. I will translate the Gemara. But you need somebody who really is fluent in these ideas to explain it. Yisrael shamdu al Har Sinai paska zuamasam. So now the Jewish people who went and experienced Har Sinai, so they were expunged of the zuama. Ovde kocham shalom du al Har Sinai lo paska zuamasam. However, the Ovde kochavim who did not experience Har Sinai, they were not expunged of the zuama. Amalei Rav Acha brei de Ravel Rav Ashi gerim mai. So the Gemara wants to know, okay, how do the gerim, are they expunged of the zuama? And Amalei Afagav Dino lo havo maslayo havo. So the Gemara says, yes, they are, because despite the fact that they themselves or their ancestors were not at Har Sinai, but their mazel was at Har Sinai on a certain level. They were at Har Sinai. Dechziv es asher yeshna po, imanu amed hayom, lefnei Hashem lokechem, ve'es asher einenu po. Those that are here, those that are not here. The simple pshat of the pasuk is future generations. The Gemara here understands it to mean even the Ovdei Kochavim who are currently not members of the Jewish people, but their mazel is currently here. Okay, and on this last point, the Gemara just has one end note, and that is the following. Rav Yochanan is arguing that the reason why Ovdei Kochavim have this Zuama is because they didn't experience Har Sinai, which means that it was at Har Sinai historically where we, the Jewish people, lost our Zuama. Upliki de Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, now this argues with another Amora who says that we lost our Zuama earlier. The Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Shlosha Doros Lo Paska Zuama Me'avaseinu. It was a three generation process of losing the Zuama. Avram Olidus Yishmael, so Avram by giving birth to Yishmael. So some of the Zuama went out with Yishmael. Yitzchak Olidus Esav. Yitzchak gives birth to twins. So Esav also extracts some of that Zuama away. Yaakov holy Yudbei Shvatim, Shalayu Basham Dofi. And Yaakov gave birth to 12 sons. Gave birth, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So Yaakov had 12 sons, of which none of them had any Dofi. Dofi, no good English word for it, duplicitous. In other words, no Zuma. So in other words, in that filtration process of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so by the time you get to Yaakov, which is years before, hundreds of years before Har Sinai, Mamar Har Sinai, so we are at that point, we already lost our Zuma, obviously that argues with Rav Yochanan's position that we lost the Zuma at Har Sinai. Ad Kan. Okay, that finishes up our Agadata for today. We are done with the Agadata. And now we head back straight to straight Mishnah, straight Gemara. Another big topic, right? Really, in terms of halacha, this 22nd perek, it's tucked away at the end of the Masechta. We had a major discussion of Schita. Ein Bishal Acher Bishal, although really the Gemara didn't get into much detail. And now, our next big topic of this 22nd perek is going to be opening up bottles on Shabbos. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain the Mishnah and the Gemara, meaning you want halacha l'maisa, you want practical halacha, so you'll know the Gemara, meaning after today, you'll have learned the Mishnah, I've learned the Gemara, and I'll even give you a little bit more, I'll give you a little Rashi, and I may even give you a little bit of Tosfos, but I understand, however, it's just the beginning of a discussion in terms of what is the practical halacha. Can you all open up your soda bottles? Can you open up your cans on Shabbos? So you don't ask me, because I'm not your posek. I'm not anybody's posek. Right? It's one of the reasons why I look so young, because I'm nobody's posek. So, but anyway, but I will take you through the Gemara. I'll take you through the Mishnah, through the Gemara, through some of the Rishonim. But it's just the beginning of a discussion, and you will be armed with information in terms of at least what you should be asking. So the Mishnah starts off with a very simple point, which is you can break the top of the barrel in order to get the grogaris that are inside. Grogaris, your dried figs, right, that you want to be eating on Shabbos, so break the top of the barrel. As long as your intent is not to make it clean. Meaning that if in the breaking of the bottle you are going to be making an opening, a functional opening where I could take things out, I could put back things back in again, so then you cannot do it. But if you're not making a functional opening, so then it's fine. Then you can break open the top of the barrel. Please take a look at Rashi. Please take a look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Shavar Adam Chavis, Malaya Grogris, Besakin, or Besayef. So you have a knife, you have a sword. I like that visual of the sword, right? Right in front of your barrel on Shabbos. So, or Besayef, Lechol Mimena Grogris, De Ein Bemakalkal, Shum Iser Shabbos. Talk about a very definitive Rashi. Rashi says, there's no Isser Shabbos over here, none. This is a destructive act, and by destroying, you're not violating Shabbos at all. Now, to be fair, I mean, we learned earlier, if it's Mekalkel, so that saves you from an Isser Daraisa. But there's still, generally speaking, an Isser Darabanan. Rashi over here says, no, not Isser Darabanan. Now, of course Rashi says that, because, well, quite frankly, the Mishnah is giving us instruction in terms of what you can do. The Mishnah says you can do this. So if the Mishnah is saying that you can do this, obviously there can't even be an Issa Derabbanan. Like, so what probably is going on over here, if I may suggest, is that Mekalko in general is Issa Derabbanan, but if there's Mekalko and there's some utility towards Shabbos, in this case, getting to food, so then it's fine. Meaning it's not even, the Chachamim don't even, or not even goes there on such a destructive act, and so therefore it's mutter legamre. It's totally permissible. Shavar Adam Chavis Lechol Mimena Grogris Vashel is Kavan Lasos Klein. Ve'ein Okfi Megufa Shel Chavis Devar Rav Yehuda. You cannot pierce the Megufa of a barrel. Megufa is a kind of a lid. Now, not exactly sure how to describe this perfectly. Picture is worth a lot over here. So if you have a picture of this, please show it to me. I'd love to see it. In the meantime, however, Rashi describes a nok for magufa hadavuka bepeh hachavis. So it's there's an opening to the lid, and there's a magufa, some sort of seal to the lid. Nekevel anotos kulav al kinakiv le misakin pischa. So what you could do is you could rip open the magufa, but what you can't do is you can't pierce a hole through the magufa, because essentially then what you're going to be doing is making a Pesach. And you can't make a Pesach like we discussed just a moment ago. Now the Chachamim say it's permissible. We're going to get to, in the Gemara, what exactly is the debate between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. You cannot pierce a hole on the side of the barrel. Now, let's say the barrel already has a hole in it, and I'd like to seal the hole. So I take out my soft wax, and I plug the hole on Shabbos, the Mishnah says, do not do that. There, you're violating a prohibition. Now, I'm not adjusting the opening of the barrel, so there's no problem over here, Vasiyas Pesach. All I'm doing is just stuffing up the hole, but when I take the soft wax and I'm basically filling in the hole with the soft wax, I'm rubbing and shaping the soft wax, that is mim arech, that is smoothing out. And when you take something which is putty-like, and you are basically conforming it to a particular shape and smoothing it out, you're violating the Isser of Memareach. Right? Ointments on Shabbos, it's an issue. Right? It's a very serious issue. Again, if somebody's, you know, if it's medicine and he seriously needs it, so you'll ask your local rabbi. But without getting into the practical, in other words, that's also part of the idea of Memareach. You're smoothing something out. I'm Rav Yehuda Maisa Balifnei Rav Yochanan Zakkai. An event like this happened. The matter was brought in front of Rav Yochanan Zakkai Ba'arev in the town of Arev. Va'amar Choshash Lo Mechatas. And Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, I'm worried that he needs to bring a carbon chatas. Dehainu. He violated the Isser of Memareach, and it's an Isser Doraisa, and he has to bring a carbon chatas. Now, Rav Yochanan Zakkai, by the way, lived both during and after the destruction of the Second Temple. He could just simply mean over here that had there been a Beis HaMikdash, he would need to bring a Karban Chatas, i.e. the Nisra D'Oraisa. Okay. I told you, I'll just take you one level down from where we are in the Mishnah, where we are in the Gemara, in terms of the opening up of a barrel on Shabbos and opening up of Kalim on Shabbos. Did you notice what our Mishnah says? Go ahead, open it up. Meaning, again, as long as you don't make a functional opening, as long as you're breaking open the barrel, that's fine. We went through Rashi this morning. Rashi says it's mekakel. It's a destructive act, and that's fine. It's totally fine. What bothers Tosfos over here is that we're going to get to Erevin, and believe it or not, it won't be that long from now. Meaning it's the 34th page of Erevin, Daf Lamed Daled. So when we start Erevin, which we're starting in a week and a half from now, and then a month after that, we're going to get to Daf Lamed Daled and Erevin. It's really not that far from here. And the Gemara in Erevin, without getting into all the details, basically says you can't open up a barrel on Shabbos. Okay, now I'm bypassing how the Gemara in Erevin got to that conclusion, but that was the conclusion of the Gemara in Erevin, that you can't open a barrel on Shabbos. And so Tosfos wonders, I'm lost. Meaning our Mishnah over here says that you can open up a barrel on Shabbos, and the Gemara in Erevin says you can't. So how do I resolve that? I'm just highlighting some points over here, doing nothing more than that. So if you want to look in that first Tosfos, and I'm halfway through the Tosfos, right after he finishes quoting the Gemara in Erevin. So Tosfos answers, and he quotes Rashi, but Tosfos answers, our case over here is where the barrel was not really a complete barrel. In other words, it was already opened and then resealed. And how was it resealed? It was glued. In other words, Rashi describes it as being some sort of sraf. There was a sap that resealed. Huh?
The sap from the thing.
Right, in other words, it was used as an adhesion. And so says Rashi, says Tosfos, that our Gemara that allows you to open up a barrel, that's only if it was once upon a time open and then resealed. Then you're allowed to reopen it on Shabbos. Okay, and then he goes on to discuss. But in other words, a very important distinction of Tosfos in that our Mishnah over here says that you're allowed to open up a barrel. So based on our Gemara versus the Gemara in Erevin, so Rashi and Tosfos both arrive at the conclusion that our Heter is only for opening up a barrel that was already once opened before and it was sealed shut. Then and only then are you allowed to reopen it. But if it's really just a barrel which was never reopened and I'm opening it for the first time, so that's going to be an issue. So again, I know very often when we are opening up our cereal boxes, our the bags, the food, whatever it is. So in other words, a lot of this comes now into play. Where was it once opened before? Is it destructive? Is it sealed? How was it sealed? Where am I tearing it? Meaning all of these issues are going to be based on a lot of the discussion we just had.
But I think the destruction by itself is not a problem. It's only if you destruct the construct that becomes a problem.
Right. Well, again, right. That I started off the whole discussion with Rashi. Meaning, because that's essentially what Rashi's point is. It's a destructive act, therefore it's mutter. But again, though, the Gemara in Erevin did not allow for the opening up of the barrel. So Tosfos is bothered. Why not? Why didn't the Gemara in Erevin just simply say open the barrel? The way our Mishnah over here does. And that's what led Tosfos to that conclusion. Okay, we start with the Gemara. We're now on Kufman, Vav, Amud, Aleph. We're starting the Gemara. It's right in the middle of the Amud. Amar Yoshia Lo Shana Lo Drusos Aval Mifuratos Lo. Now the figs that I'm getting out of the barrel, they are stuck together, they're clung together. But if the figs are separated, then no. What difference does it make what the figs are stuck together or are separated? What's going on over here? Why should that matter? So we need an understanding of the Gemara. The Gemara is gonna, we gotta read on in the Gemara. Maybe Adam is a chavis shal yayin. Here we're talking about a barrel of wine. So, what difference does it make? The figs are stuck together. The figs are separated. What's going on? So the Gemara says, "Ahi Rabbanan, Masnisin Rabbi Nechemyah." So this is the punchline. That our Mishnah is holding like Rabbi Nechemyah. Now, do you remember? We got over Rabbi Nechemyah already a number of times in our Masechta. In the world of Muksa, Rabbi Nechemyah has a position which we happen not to follow, which is the most extreme position regarding Muksa, which is the following. On Shabbos, even if it's a klish, a malachto leheter, a fork, a knife, a spoon, Rabbi Nechemyah says that on Shabbos I can only use it for its intended purpose. So if I have a spoon on Shabbos, I can only take it to eat soup. If I have a fork on Shabbos, I can only eat it to eat my dinner. I cannot use my fork, my spoon, my knife for any other purpose. Even though it's a klish malachto leheter, it's fine. Rabbi Nechemyah for sure would not allow that, but he wouldn't even allow you to crack the nut open with a fork, because that's not the primary purpose of a fork. And so, over here, what do I want to do? I want to open up my barrel. So what am I going to bring? I'm going to bring my knife. If our Mishnah is like going like Rabbi Nechemyah, which the Gemara says it is, so then you have to wonder to yourself, this is a muksa question. How can I pick up my knife and open up the barrel to get to my figs? I can't do that. Again, according to Rabbi Nechemyah, that's not the primary purpose of a knife. The primary purpose of a knife is to eat my food. So what am I doing? So it must be, this is the Gemara's thought process, it must be that after opening up the barrel, I'm then going to need the knife to separate the figs. That's got to be what our Mishnah is talking about. That's the only way that our Mishnah would work. The Braisa that talks about opening up a wine barrel with a knife, the Braisa is not going like Rabbi Nechemyah. The knife is a klisha malachto leheter. It's fine, pick up the knife, it's not a problem. Now that's very interesting, all very good, meaning now that we understand the muksa consideration, you understand our Mishnah, but why did you need to do that? The Gemara's next question. Umay duchke, sorry, lost my place.
That's right.
The umay duchke de Rabbi Yoshia lo okmi masnisin to Rabbi Nechemyah over Jerusalem lokman b'mefuradus v'rabanan. But you really painted yourself in a corner. Why did you feel like our Mishnah had to be where the figs were all stuck together, and I needed the knife to separate the figs? Just simply say the figs were separate, and our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Nechemyah. Amar Rava masnisin kashisa my irya didni grogros lisne peros. Gemara says, I'll tell you why we paint ourselves into the corner. Because if you think about it, the Mishnah could have given a barrel filled with any food. The barrel of the Mishnah could have just simply said the word peros. Instead, the Mishnah opted to say figs. Why figs? So, Elo Shema Minah B'Drusos. So it must be that the reason why is because the figs were stuck together, and why does the Mishnah need to be there? Because I need to cut it up, I need to separate them with a knife. Well, why did the Mishnah do that? Because the Mishnah is going like Reb Nechemia, and the only reason why I could bring the knife is so that after opening up the barrel, I can then get to the figs. Okay. Tanya Chadach Hosel Shal Grogos Veshal Tamay Matir Mavkiya V'chotech. One brace that tells us that if I have a bag of figs or of dates, I can untie the bag, I can cut open the bag. V'tanya Idach Matir Avolo Mavkiya V'lo Chotech. Another brace that says that I can untie the bag, but I cannot cut open the bag. So Lo Kasha Rabban Rab Nechemia. And again, resolution is very simple. The first brisa is going like the Chachamim. The second brisa is going like Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia will not allow you to take a knife to cut open your bag, because that's not the primary purpose of a knife. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Nechemia, it's muksa. I can't pick up a knife. Untie the bag, that's fine. I'll do that with my hands. Pick up a knife to cut open the bag? Rabbi Nechemia says, you can't do that. You violate the issue of muksa. The Tanya Rabbi Nechemia Omer, afilo tavar ve'afilo talis ve'afilo sakin, Ein nitalin ella letzarech tashmishan. Any item on Shabbos, clothing, utensils, it doesn't matter. I can only use them for its primary purpose and nothing else. I'm sorry, biburtia bishabasa. So, how about this? Okay, I take a spear. All right, we had the sword in the Mishnah. Now we're up to our next weapon of choice. We have a spear. What the person is doing in his house with swords and spears. Okay.
Ancient times.
So he has a spear in his house. He wants to spear his barrel in order to get the wine out. Yeah, yes or no? Well, if his intent is making an opening in the barrel, no good. Because that's a Seos Pesach that you're not allowed to do. Or he wants to impress his guests. Which, by the way, I feel will be so impressive. I feel like if I were at that table and someone with a spear comes and puts it right through the barrel, okay, I'd be impressed. And in other words, and by the way, I know I'm making small light of the Gemara over here. But what does that mean, impressive? Meaning, Rashi, laharchiv motzi hayayin benekev gadol midalo nakev lekederach hanokvin nekev agul v'yafeh. Meaning, if I was interested in making a Pesach, I would make a nice, neat, round hole in the barrel. Here, what am I doing? Taking a spear, right? A primitive weapon, putting it through the barrel. I'm not interested. This is not a Seos Pesach. I'm not making an opening over here yet. Right, right. This is kilkul. I'm dislodging. I'm. This is a destructive act. So may so odim alayin yafu kamechavim v'sharei. Amar leila pitzke kamechavim v'alser. He gives a very clear answer. Nope, can't do it. Pshaster. Meitzver Rosh HaMengamal Amar maybe Adam Chavisho Yanu Meitzis Rosh HaBasayev. What about our Mishnah? You could take a sword. You could lop off the top of the barrel. Ha'asam v'adalayin yafu kamechavim. Ha'achem isa delayin yafu kamechavim. Right. I know sometimes I sound like a broken record. But apparently we get that message a lot. It's good. It gives us a little more time. Okay, the Vadalain Yafaka Mechavin Hacha Imisa Dalain Yafaka Mechavin Lepechusim Iftach. Here, if really I was interested in Ayin Yafah, so I do, like with the words done in the Mishnah, which is, I lop off the top of the barrel. The fact that I'm going in from the side with a spear, granted it's a little bit primitive, granted I could have made a finer cut, a nicer cut. But when all said and done, I'm still making an opening on the barrel from the side. That's a Seos Pesach. And therefore, it would be awesome. Okay. With permission, let me just go through a little bit more Gemara today. If you need to leave, that's fine. Just a couple more minutes just to get me through the next sugya. Ein nokfi megufa meravuna machlokas lamala. There's a debate in our mission in terms of opening the barrel through the megufa. Now, there's a hole in the barrel. The magufa is a stopper, so we can't puncture a hole through that magufa. The debate in our Mishnah is when it's lamala, aval minatzad divrei hakol aser, but when it's on the side, and I'm opening the magufa on the side, according to everybody, it's going to be aser. V'hani deitana lo yikvanu mitzida, and in fact, that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can't open it from the side. Rav Chista goes the other way. No. From the side, that's the debate. On the top, according to everyone, it's going to be mutter. And when it says lo yikven mitzida, that's not talking about opening it at the area of the magufa. That's talking about going right into the barrel and putting a hole in the side of the barrel, which, as we just learned, that's a siyas pesach that you're not allowed to do. Tana rabbanan nekvin nekav echados b'shabbes v'imbal osiv mosiv. The brisa says I cannot make a new hole in the barrel on Shabbos. That's a siyas pesach. You're not allowed to do that. If you're going to open the hole wider, it's already a hole. I'm just widening the hole. That's good. Now, some say that you can't even open the hole wider. If it's an old hole, and I'm just reopening an old hole, so that you're allowed to do on Shabbos lichatchila. So now the Tanakhama says that to make a brand new opening that you're not allowed to do. The Gemara says, I don't understand. If I'm widening an already existing hole, am I not making a Pesach? Look, first of all, let's give our definitions. I mean, really, we should have started this with this point, but that's how Gemara operates. Really, we should give a definition. What does that mean, I'm making a Pesach? When does the Torah prohibit me making a Pesach? Dvar Torah called Pesach she'enu asur lahachnis ulahotzi, eino Pesach. A Pesach, by definition, has to create a two-way street where there's communication going in, communication coming out. Okay? It has to be where the liquid can come out and go in. If it's not that wide, it's not a Pesach. V'rabanu degazim mishum lo shotan agolim. However, the Wow. Okay, I'm almost done. Rabbanu degazim mishum lo shotan agolim, it's the rabbis made xera because what ends up happening is lo shotan agolim. Where we make the smallest hole in the chicken coop, exhaust. Yeah. Right? We talked about this earlier in the Masechta. Right? The chicken coop is a disastrous smell inside, and it's because the chickens do what they do, nature, and so therefore we create a tiny hole on the top as an exhaust. Now, da'avi liluya avira lafuke hevla. There. It's so that air can go in and the hevel can escape. The imbala osif mosif. Osuf vadebalusha tanagom lasila osufe. Now, in terms of widening the hole, the rabbis made no such zero. Why? Because in the lusha tanagolim, we would never widen the hole. Why not? Mishum rechsha. Because if we widen the hole, that will allow for the bugs to get into the chicken coop and other types of rats and shrutzim, the chickens would be at risk, and so therefore we would not wind the holes. The Yeshomim main mosifim zimna dolo tigna mi karvasil or vuchebe. And the Yeshomim's position is no, we're not allowed to even wind the holes on Shabbos. Why? Because even the lul shatar nagolim, we're tempted sometimes to wind the hole just a little bit. Darsh Rav Nachman, Mishum Rav Yochanan, Halacha, Ki Yeshomim, and the Gemara has a very clear conclusion. Asiyas Pesach is asur on Shabbos. Even widening an existing hole will also be usher on Shabbos as well. Ad Kan will stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up at the top of the next Amud. Continue Refuah Shleima for Binyamin Zev HaKohen Ben Shimon Rivka and Aval Zak Avram Ben Yakira Avigail. Rabbi Chana Min Akash Mar Rav Sekosh Mach Zakir Sofich Achir Ben Torah Mitzvah Shemem Ben Yakira Avigail. Go Yagdot Rabbi Yadir.